Hello and welcome to the Thursday, February 11th edition of Juno Afternoon on your very own KTOO in downtown Juneau, Alaska. We've got a great show. We're going to talk about a rock party, a guest chef at Salt Opera this weekend, Monteverdi's Le Orfeo, and Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Klamath Basin water use agreements expired in Congress, but as Chris Thomas reports, interested parties, including tribes, continue to work on a plan.
The states of Oregon and California, the utility Pacific Corps, and two federal agencies, Commerce and Interior, say they're moving forward to amend the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement to remove four dams in the basin by 2020. For tribes and sportsmen in the region, it's one more chance to restore native fish runs. Congress couldn't agree on it before last year's session ended, so Klamath Tribe's Chairman Don Gentry says a new approach was needed.
Just an attempt to keep this in the hands of the states, the Pacific Corps, and the parties. The opposition was to federal authorization for dam removal, and so this is basically keeping it out of the hands of the federal government, so it won't require legislation.
Gentry says it's been almost 100 years since the first dam was built in the region, which cut off migration of salmon and steelhead to the tribe's treaty rights fishing areas. Taking out dams is only one phase of a larger, more complex water rights picture. The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement is the part that expired at the end of December without congressional approval. That leaves all the parties to that agreement facing all the same concerns about how to share a scarce resource. So far, the states and agencies have agreed only to embark on this new path. The details are still to be worked out, but no federal money is needed for removing the dams. Pacific Corps and the state of California will cover it. I'm Chris Thomas.
Navajo Nation President Russell Begay and Vice President Jonathan Nez will sign the Navajo Veterans Act on Saturday at the tribe's casino near Flagstaff, Arizona. The leaders will then travel to five Navajo communities over the weekend in Arizona and New Mexico to thank veterans and conduct symbolic signing ceremonies. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, the act is designed to involve the tribe's veterans more directly in policy making that affects their benefits and services.
The Veterans Act will create the Navajo Nation Veterans Administration and Advisory Council. It'll also move the VA, which is staffed by less than 30 people, from the tribe's Human Resources Department to the Office of the President and Vice President. Navajo officials say the reorganization will give veterans a more prominent voice in tribal government. The Veterans Act will also modernize record-keeping technology and allow the Navajo Nation to get a more accurate count of its veterans. No clear estimate exists, but officials say there could be anywhere between 10,000 and nearly 40,000 Navajo veterans. Though the bill doesn't include any additional funding for the VA, Navajo Nation President Russell Begay says he'll contribute carryover funds to the agency. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heiches in Flagstaff.
Wisconsin tribes are gearing up for the annual State of the Tribes Address, which is planned to take place next week at the Capitol in Madison. Tribes gather to address the state legislature about key priorities for their Native nations. This year's address will be delivered by Lacouture Chairman Mick Isham. The State of the Tribes Address began in 2005 to help promote better communications between the tribes and the state. There are 11 federally recognized tribes in Wisconsin. Tribes recently gathered at the Capitol to voice concerns to state lawmakers about sacred site protection. The Ho-Chunk Nation organized a Save the Mounds rally, which drew hundreds of people. Chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, John Barrasso, says he's committed to working on housing issues. In remarks delivered this week to the National American Indian Housing Council, he expressed the need for safe, good, and affordable housing in tribal areas and called for the reauthorization of Native American housing legislation to help, which he hopes will pass the full Senate this year. Tribal leaders and Native organizations are advocating for the housing bill's approval. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This Friday, climb aboard a ship of dreams at the KXLL Yacht Rock Party at the Alaskan, featuring the classiest limbo contest at 11, followed by a nautical-themed costume competition at midnight when we'll name the next captain of Juno. We set sail at 9, cruising till the break of dawn.
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day.
Sounds like Juno, doesn't it? Well, welcome to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Joan Pardis, your host on Thursdays. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. We're going to jump right into it because that last PSA we heard is about a party that's happening this weekend. And here in here at the studio to discuss it is KXSL's very own Annie Bartholomew and very own Kira Alcama. And Kira is our new intern here at KTOO, their new intern at KTOO, and she's going to be working at KXSL, and she also has a show from 4 to 5 every day, Monday through Friday.
That's right, yeah.
Well, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome, Annie. So let's talk about this Yacht Rock Party. What's going on at the Alaskan this weekend?
Oh, my gosh. So New Year's Eve, we threw a disco party. It was incredible, and we wanted to recreate the magic with some inspiration from late 70s, early 80s Yacht Rock, which is a genre of music you probably didn't know it at the time, but, you know, very soft, fun throwback, kind of throwback to us. So we're going to go to the Alaska at 9 o'clock Friday night and kind of reimagine what it would have been like if we all had yachts in the 70s with nautical themed apparel. You know, if you got a sailor outfit, a cap, you want to go Gilligan's Island status. Jeff, I think you're wearing something appropriate right now.
He's always wearing something appropriate for that type
of thing. Shirt. So, you know, the legislature is in full swing, and we just wanted to bring a bunch of new people who are new to Juno and our friends to get out there and just have a really silly dance party.
Oh, my God.
A very serious dance party, too.
Absolutely. So it's 9 o'clock at the Alaskan on Friday night.
You betcha.
Okay, how much is it?
Oh, it's free.
All right.
We can't charge people for the experience.
It sounds so much fun. I was like, I thought there had to have to be a cover. You know,
oh, no.
Throw back to the 70s and 80s. I want to let you know that Jeff and I are the only ones in the studio that live through the 70s and 80s at the moment. But everything that comes around has to come around at least twice or three times.
That's right.
So, Kira, tell us about, like, the playlist. What do you envision as far as the music?
So the playlist, as far as I know, is a little bit under wraps because our favorite sisters from Tuesday night from KXLL will be DJing, and they've been crafting a playlist. But if I have any guesses, there's going to be some Hall & Oates, there's going to be some Toto, there's going to be some Michael McDonald, there could even be some Kenny Loggins. But you have to... Annie just swooned.
I'm getting excited
about it. Jeff's Aloha shirt just fluttered in the tropical breeze at the
Ooh,
thought of
very nice.
Kenny Loggins. But yeah, you'll have to come down to find out exactly what it is.
It sounds like fun. I'm kind of envisioning like wide pants, little ginger outfits, Marianne outfits,
yes.
Professor outfits, you know, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some Overboard. We were talking about Kurt Russell and Overboard. We're pretty sure that was the movie. But anyway, so I have a question about this oxymoron in the PSA that we just listened to. Classiest limbo contest. What does that mean?
Well, limbo, we're going to make it classy. That's why we're hosting at 11 p.m. You know, when people are in their top shape, you know, when they're most eager to, you know, pull some muscles shown off for their friends.
Well, for me, it's about the outfits because the outfits, Yacht Rock, by definition, is classy. So the outfits are going to make this the classiest limbo competition in the history of yacht rock soirees in Juneau.
Right. You have to imagine as you're getting dressed how it will flow as you limbo.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Gracefully.
Really
very regal. And speaking of outfits, at midnight, we are having a costume contest to name the next captain of Juneau. There are a lot of people out there with captain outfits, and we'd like to see them.
Okay. So, you know, I'm married to a captain, but we're not going to go there. So let's bring this back. So at midnight, let's say there's type A personalities listening saying, I want to be the next captain of Juneau at the yacht rock party at the Alaskan hosted by KXL. What's the rubric? Like, how do you become the next captain?
Well,
is it the crowd?
It's not going to be crowd. It's going to be judged by our favorite sisters. You're going to come with your outfit. The more elaborate, the better, more convincing. And then we're going to have people kind of explain why they're the best captain of Juneau. And there may or may not be a dance portion because there's a lot of criteria that goes into it. Right, Kira?
Yeah, movement. Definitely the way the fabric moves, you know, not only with the limbo contest, but with, you know, your classic dance party moves. It's all part of it. It's very holistic.
To be captain, it really has to, you know, there's more than just looking the part.
And it's not just bragging rights.
Okay.
We're going to be giving away KTOO swag, tote bags, coffee. We just got some new KXL premiums in because tomorrow is our one-day pledge drive.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Before we leave the Yacht Rock party, I just have one question more, and that is how many people can go to the Alaskan. Like, it sounds like it's going to be really crowded. Do you know, like, for the disco party, was it like 50 people, 100 people?
Oh, we didn't count. It was like a steady flow throughout the night.
Uh-huh.
But between like 11:30 and 12:30, it was just super happening. We had a Soul Train dance competition at midnight, and it was very difficult to split up the floor, especially in my 6-inch platform heels, and I was slipping all over the place. Had to take them off. It does get pretty packed, but they help us move out the tables. So it really is a dance party in there. And the bar wasn't too busy last time. So you can get some really nice water to accompany your dance moves.
There you go. Sounds really fun. Okay. And you're not going to divulge your outfits, are you? Either one of you?
No.
I'm on the fence. I've got a lot of ideas. I ordered a jumpsuit off of Etsy. But the shoes is the hardest part for me. Kira?
Yeah, I really can't say more than there's stripes involved.
There's stripes.
It's very nautical.
I would hope
so.
When you think 70s, 80s and shoes, well, that could be a wide selection.
Do you have anything in your closet, Joan?
Not anymore.
Dang it.
I'm going to think about it. But let's talk about this one-day drive, okay? So what's cooking at KXXL?
So on KXL, tomorrow's our one-day drive. We come at our listeners for one day because, you know, we want to give them the best programming ever. It's Valentine's Day weekend, so Kira has worked on this incredible love-themed playlist. A lot of Barry White, a lot of soul music. We're having a live performance with Playboy Spaceman at 1 o'clock. They're doing Singing Valentine's tomorrow, so they're going to come in and give us a taste of that. Our favorite sisters are going to preview the yacht party from 8 to 9 tomorrow. And then at 4:30 to 5, we're doing this really cool thing with Colette Costa from the Gold Town. She will be reading love messages on the air submitted by our listeners to KXLL. So we've never tried it before, and Costa is radio gold.
Really, besides Colette Costa on the air at 4:30, I don't think anyone else needs any more information than that. It's like, oh, you got to tune in.
And she only wants to read them to Tom Jones.
I am like in a flashback. That is so funny
throwback
in here. Retro. Okay, well, that sounds great. Okay, and so, Kira, let's talk a little bit about your show from 4 to 5 at our sister station. What's it like? What kind of music do you like to play?
You know, I spend a lot of my time as an intern here trolling the internet for some new music. So usually what happens is I find something I really like, and then I really want to share it with everyone. So I usually will lead off with something that I found. Recently I've been really into The Suffers, Grace Love and the True Loves. So definitely groovy music, maybe a little bit of Chromeo as well, but it's anyone's guess. what I could be playing at any given day. So today I might be doing a little bit of some yacht rock preparation, you know, get people excited for tomorrow night. But it's really the newest music I can find and things I hope Juno likes.
And stuff from 30 years ago.
Of course.
If not more. So you heard it here today on Juno Afternoon. KXXL is a mix of music. And while you might not have thought that it was 70s yacht music, you never know. So you should tune in and give it a listen. Well, ladies, thanks for dropping by. Come by anytime to make me feel old. And we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Thanks, Joe.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It is 19 minutes past the hour on Thursday, February 11th, and the current temperature, it is 37 at the Juno Airport. Downtown is 40. Mendenhall Valley is 33. And we've got a strong wind advisory for tonight for downtown Juno and Douglas. If you're wondering why we were listening to Brandy, if you're just joining the show, it's because there is a yacht rock party hosted by KXXL at the Alaskan tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. Go check that out. But right now, we are jumping into our next set of guests, and we are talking food and good food. We have Lionel Utipa. He is here. He is the chef from Salt, our very own, one of our many eateries here in town. And he's also here with a chef from San Diego, which is maybe why it's not raining at the moment. He might have brought some
Thank God. California sunshine.
Right? You'd have to leave.
Yeah,
it's
right?
Sora Takuyuna from San Diego, and he's going to be the guest chef at Salt this weekend. Well, welcome, guys. How are you?
Good.
We were wonderful. Thanks for having us.
So talk a little bit about Salt. So about a year ago, you started a lunch menu.
So, yes, we opened up about 2 years ago, and we decided to open up for lunch last year. We just started getting really, really popular with lunch this session. Our menu changes quite often, and it's a really eclectic variety of different kinds of food from around the world.
Yeah, it is. I've, of course, eaten at Salt, and it's fabulous. As a chef, how long have you been the chef at Salt?
As soon as we opened.
So as a chef, what's your vision? I mean, I know that chefs are artists in their own right, and so what kind of food and presentation of food really kind of is your, you know, vision of the perfect meal or the perfect restaurant? What do you bring to Salt that's uniquely yours?
In a perfect world, something that's really important to me is the quality of product that we serve, and just being sustainable, getting our produce, our meats, and our seafood here locally. Of course, making the guests happy.
Yeah, well, I would guess you succeed. I mean, it's one of our favorite eateries here in town, and thank you for being part of it. And I would imagine that some of those things you just discussed are quite difficult in Juneau, Alaska. Some are easier than others, like
right.
The seafood, but some are more difficult. So thank you for sticking it out and giving us a great eatery here in Juneau. What's happening this weekend?
I'll let Zara go ahead and talk about that.
Okay. We're going to do a collaboration guest dinner on Saturday and Sunday. And we've just been, you know, somewhat planning it for the last, 2-3 weeks, more or less, about what we can get, what's accessible. Since I've been here, I think for me, as a new person, I've never been to Alaska. It's really beautiful. You have to be really, really patient with things, ordering, and it has to be flown in or on a boat. I mean, in California, I can go call, and it'll come in a matter of hours on a truck. So I'm thinking to Lionel that I was like, man, you really have to be a patient man to deal with this, you know. And it's great, you know. I mean, it shapes a person, a chef, to see what is available and what is not, and, you know, kind of keeps on toes. So,
have you collaborated before, the two of you?
Yeah. I should probably give a brief introduction of how I know Zara.
I'm nobody. I'm all right.
He was the first chef I ever worked for and kind of took me under his wing. And I'm happy to say he's a really good friend of mine and a mentor. So this collaboration dinner is a first for us at Salt. So I thought, we'd be very honored if Sarah came along and cooked with us for her first dinner.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So can you give us a little sneak peek of what you have in mind?
We have some, I don't want to get into details, but a lot of produce is very, I guess I want to say seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to use avocados. That's not fair. You know, there's a lot of, it's really not fair if you use avocados in Alaska at this point in time. So we just tend to use what is, like I said, available, accessible, what fits in their budget, and what we can do as a team, as well as the crew at Salt, and try to manage and put out good product.
How big is the kitchen staff?
Right now I have anywhere from 8 to 10 people in my kitchen. Not all the time,
mm-hmm.
But that goes from a steward to a prep cook to a line cook and to some of my managers.
Okay, that sounds great. And what kind of restaurant do you work in San Diego?
I went back to San Diego. Well, Carlsbad. My parents are from there. They live there now. But before that, I was just traveling around. I was in France and Copenhagen, doing a couple stints here and there. So I'm just trying to soul search. You know, I wanted to figure out what I want to do. But I mean, as a chef or a young cook, it's just a never-ending story. Just got to keep on moving, got to keep on evolving, seeing what's new, and you know, things of that nature. So.
And here you are in Alaska, part
yeah,
of that soul.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's really majestic. So,
Valentine's Day is Sunday, right?
It's Sunday, and we are actually doing our Valentine's Day menu on Saturday and Sunday. We know everyone can't make it out on Sunday, so we want to have it available for guests to dine and come in on Saturday.
Okay.
As well.
And reservations are probably recommended.
Yes. Uh huh.
How full are you right now? Do you know?
We're doing pretty good. We have some availability on Saturday. Sunday's looking pretty full right now, of course, but we have some open spots.
Okay. And it's a special menu, obviously.
Special menu.
Just for this weekend.
Yeah, I'll have 6 courses.
Ooh.
We won't offer a regular menu,
mm-hmm.
So strictly just the 6 courses and a couple snacks.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both for coming in. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap it up and bring in the next guest as far as what's cooking at Salt?
No, we look forward to serving the town and hope we can catch everyone in.
Okay, before I let you go, those.
Yeah.
I have to ask because I have this talent. I have this creative think tank here in the studio.
Sure.
So what is your most favorite simple dish to make?
Wow.
Like if you were doing it at home, you know what I mean? Like you were having some friends over and
right.
you're not working, but it's something that is simple and maybe like some people who can't really cook like myself might be able to emulate something like that or not, or just something that you guys want. You would do, like, if you were your go-to.
I try to eat the healthiest I can, and I eat really whole. So, a grain. I usually eat a lot of quinoa, and I like having a nice cut of meat, a ribeye, if that's not available. My second option is pork or chicken, and just some seasonal vegetables. I keep it pretty simple.
Sounds great. And on the ribeye, how would you cook it?
Cast iron. With grapeseed oil, fresh thyme, garlic, maybe a little bit of butter.
Sounds good. What about you?
That seems very, very fancy. I'm like, what should I eat? I really like eggs, all kinds of eggs. I mean, I like eating a lot of rice. It's really hard. I love burgers. I'm pretty simple. Whatever I have in my fridge, usually if you're working a lot, kind of see, like, what do I have that's, you know, easy to make or fast, quick. But I don't know.
And one last question, and it's for each of you.
Sure.
So do you experiment, or do you like kind of staying with the tried and true?
I love to experiment. I like keeping things traditional and kind of just maybe messing around with it a little bit, whether it's a flavor profile or how I present dishes, but I try to keep it traditional and not. I don't want to disrespect anyone or any style of food. So
you want to experiment, but not go too way out of the box. What about you, sir?
I'm pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
I like to cook very simple food. I like to cook with a lot of acid, very fresh, very clean. I'm not really fond of like putting a lot of butter, but I do like that kind of cooking, old French. But I think nowadays, I think people are really wanting to experiment with other types of food. So simple and clean. That's how I would like to cook.
Sounds great. All right. So you heard it here. Salt has a special menu for Valentine's weekend, Saturday and Sunday. A guest chef up from San Diego, the current chef's mentor, which is pretty cool that he's up here for Alaska. And maybe it will, I don't know, snow or be sunny this weekend for your time in Alaska.
Yeah. I mean, it's been great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not complaining. I love it. It's very, very crisp here.
It is definitely crisp.
Yeah.
That is one way to look at it. All right. Well, thanks for coming in. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Whenever I explore the land of Yin, I always take one on the chin. And now this lioness has almost made me tame. I can't pronounce her name, but eggplant is her game. Lady sticks to me like white on rice. She never cooks the same way twice. Maybe it's the mushrooms, maybe the tomatoes. Can't reveal her name, but they're
When my baby cooks her eggplant, she don't read no book. She's got a Gioconda kind of dirty look. And my baby cooks her eggplant about 19 different ways. Sometimes I just have it raw with mayonnaise.
Juno afternoon, here we are on KTOO in downtown Juneau, Alaska. It is 29 minutes to the hour, and it is Thursday, February 11th, so we've talked about a rock yacht club, okay, with 70s and 80s music, nope comment, and then we went right into food with guest chef here for Salt, and now we're going right into opera with Todd Hunt, the artistic director of the Orpheus Project, and if you're thinking, what is that? That is the new name for Opera to Go.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we decided to change our name, or at least transition into a new name over a couple of seasons, mostly just to highlight that we do more than opera. We try to help other musical entities in town put on productions or concerts or just be a facilitator and make things happen here.
Okay, yeah. So the Orpheus Project.
Here
we go. Okay, and then this weekend, what's going on? You're going to have
major
collaboration.
Yeah, we have a little thing going on here.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we're doing what one might consider the very first opera ever. I mean, it's not really, but it's the one that is done anymore. It's by Claudio Monteverdi, and it's his Orfeo, which is Orpheus in Italian. So this is from 1607, really long time ago as far as especially instruments are concerned. So we've got in the pit lots of different things than you normally see, like... well, gosh, a theorbo.
Which, okay.
You know, yeah.
What is that?
It's like a giant guitar with two necks. One of the necks is like, I don't know, 5 or 6 feet long with 7 bass strings
and
on it.
And you have someone who knows how to play.
Oh, yeah. We have two people playing these things.
Juno.
That's
great.
Yeah. So, and the other neck is kind of like, it's a lute, essentially. So it's a huge lute with, yeah. Kind of on steroids.
Okay.
So we've got two of those, actually a large one and a smaller one that we use
and
sort of in tandem. So it sounds like a lute, but it's got with the bass strings, I mean, it has more resonance. It's a bigger sound.
Right.
And granted, lutes aren't super loud to begin with. But with these bass strings, which like are at the bottom of the piano, so it has a huge range, which is really cool. And it's one of the primary accompaniment instruments of the 17th century and even a little earlier.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So this opera, while it's not one of the first, it's the one that kind of took hold.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
The one
that
like the form became popular.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you talked about instruments from that era. How many people in the pit? How many people on the stage?
Yeah.
Where is it?
The numbers.
You
want to do the numbers here.
No,
all right.
Because it's a big production.
It is a big production. So in the pit, I'm going to say like 16 or 18 people. Yeah, I should always count
before.
Okay. That's the typical question. Okay. But yeah, something like that. And there's a lot of doubling too. In the strings, for instance, everybody except for one person is playing modern violins, violas, and cellos, and basses, but they're using Baroque bows, which are, you know, if you've ever seen a modern, like, violin bow, it has kind of a bend that goes down towards the strings. This one actually bends the other direction, so the sound and the feel and the articulation is really different, and all of our players have been having a great time, you know, learning this new basically a new technique of playing. Dawn Lindsay, who is from Anchorage and is a Baroque violinist there, she has come down and has done workshops and is playing with the group, too, and sort of training people to play in this style. Aside from that, we've got a Baroque cellist from Anchorage as well, who is a specialist in this kind of thing. Our two Theorbo players, one's from New York, one's from Seattle, we're both specialists in this. We have a Baroque triple harp. And, you know, that is something I'm sure we have not seen in town. It's a wacky thing. There's no pedals on it like a normal concert harp. It has like three layers of strings, and you have to reach inside and to play chromatic notes. It's really cool.
Wow.
Like, I can't even describe how cool this pit is. Of course, we have, you know, a harpsichord, which is like the most normal thing we've got in there. Well, and brass instruments, but one of the brass instruments is called a cornetto, which is like this weird mashup of a trumpet and a flute. So it's like an end-blown flute, but with a really small trumpet mouthpiece.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So that's in the pit. What's going on
okay.
stage? And I just want to let our listeners know mm-hmm. that if you just joined us, we're talking with Jeff Brown and I. We're talking with Todd Hunt from the Orpheus Project, which was
Operatigo.
Operatigo,
okay.
And this weekend, they are doing Monteverdi's Orfeo, and that is at Thunder Mountain,
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7:30 on Friday and Saturday, and 3 o'clock on Sunday, Valentine's Day.
So we just talked about the pit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, live musicians mm-hmm. from all over
the place.
And then what about on stage? Because you have some visiting artists.
Right, we have three visiting artists on stage actually too. This is a big deal, guys. So there's probably 14 singers, something like that, plus 8 dancers. So Juno Dance Theater is with us again this year as well. And, they're working within and amongst our staging to bring their, beautiful stuff and help tell our story. A visiting artist, Sumner Thompson, is the lead, Orfeo, and he's sung this role numerous times, and he's fantastic, fantastic. It's like nothing I think we've really ever heard here. So he's an early music specialist, and while singing itself hasn't changed a lot in the last 400 some years, the way the style of singing kind of has, and so he's got all of the ornaments and everything down very well, and it's just completely kind of mind-blowingly beautiful.
And where is he coming from?
He's coming from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you have two others.
Yeah, and two others. Pete Morgan, who's a bass. He's from Chicago, and he's singing actually three roles of Pluto, Charon, the ferryman of the River Styx, and a shepherd who has a solo role. Stephen Ahrens, who's playing another shepherd, and Apollo, because Apollo makes a surprise appearance at the end. And he's from Portland.
And then all our local talent.
And then lots of other local people,
local
many
talent.
Of which, some of which are, well, maybe just one, but a few of which are making their, stage debut.
That's
so,
great. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, not the sound. We've talked a lot about the sound. About the story.
Okay.
So what language is it?
Okay, yeah. So it is in Italian, but don't mm-hmm. be afraid, because we have, as always, projected English supertitles, so you will be able to understand perhaps even better than mm-hmm. if we were singing in English for you. So the story is essentially if you know the story of Orpheus and Eurydice, they get married, they're really happy, she goes off and gets bit by a snake and dies, and he's really sad and says, well, you know what, I'm going to go down to hell and get her back. So he goes down, charms everybody, and, brings her back, but the condition was that he can't turn around and look at her until they get up to the land of the living, and something happens, and he does, and so then he's really sad again, because now she's gone forever. Well,
he's not a man who takes no easily, I guess.
So, yeah, he's really sad, going, oh, no, what am I going to do? And so then Apollo comes down and saves the day and makes everything right, and it's a happy ending. which is not the
typical.
Well, so basically he says, well, you can come up to heaven with me, live an immortal life, and see her amongst the stars.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not how the myth ends, but it's a typical opera convention that sometimes there's a surprise happy ending.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Which we have here.
That's good.
Yeah.
Surprise happy ending, Valentine's Day,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know,
nope.
Going to
Perfect.
The ends of the earth and to different
uh-huh.
realms and
right.
parallel universes
right.
and so on we and
got
so
it all.
Forth. There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's at Thunder Mountain Auditorium.
Right.
And we've got a very different seating configuration, so good. Tickets are actually pretty limited. There will be certainly no more than 200 seats in there.
Okay, how can
uh-huh.
you have a different configuration?
So you might, you know, if you've been in there, you might notice that the seats are those bleacher mm-hmm. kind of style, and they actually fold up and push against the wall so that the whole floor is completely open. And we have a ramp platform thing jutting out into the playing space with the orchestra in full view.
Oh,
yeah.
This sounds fabulous.
No, it's really pretty cool.
Okay, so tickets are available at the Jack website, I would imagine.
Yeah, the Jack website, as well as our website, operatico.net, or you can get them at the Jack and save some of the service fees and that kind of thing.
$5
also,
a ticket,
right,
Brandy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the bookstores as well. And, of course, okay. we'll sell them at the door if there's any left.
Right.
Which yeah, I'm sure there won't be, so you get them in advance.
Okay, so we're talking Friday at what time again?
Yeah, Friday at 7:30.
Saturday
at 7:30, and Sunday at 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Todd, thank you for everything you
yeah.
do for our
well,
community
well, thank you, Jen.
And your excitement about this production,
yeah.
and it sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
go buy your tickets.
Yes.
We're going to, not us,
right.
the world. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Great. Thanks for listening. Yeah.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 11th of February, 2016. It was on this day, 1990, Nelson Mandela was released from prison outside Cape Town, South Africa, the Victor Verster prison where he'd been imprisoned for 27 years because of his activities with the African National Congress, resisting the apartheid government. The Congress had observed a philosophy of nonviolence for decades, but some members of the group, including Mandela, had begun advocating violence as the only way to deal with the violent regime. When Mandela was released, he was 71, and South Africans were shocked to see him. They had last seen him in 1964, publicly, when he went away to prison. 5 years before he was released, the president, P.W. Botha, had declared a state of emergency, stricter curfews, stricter punishments, broader powers for the police. Violence was escalating. There were sanctions against South Africa. There were continued demands for Mandela's release. In 1988, Mandela contracted tuberculosis, and Botha was worried that he might die in prison, so he offered Mandela a deal. He could be released in return for publicly condemning the violent resistance, and Mandela refused the deal. He said, let Botha renounce violence. Let him say that he will dismantle apartheid. The following year, Botha left office. The new president, F.W. de Klerk, was a right-wing conservative, but he saw that times were changing and that the economy would collapse if he did not bring apartheid to an end. And on February 2, 1990, he gave a speech to Parliament that amazed his supporters. He announced that he was lifting the ban on the African National Congress and that he was freeing Nelson Mandela. He left prison, Mandela, just after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, February the 11th, under a blue sky, walked through the prison gates, holding hands with his wife, Winnie, rode to the Cape Town City Hall, where he addressed a huge gathering, where he announced that the armed struggle against the regime would continue. And Mandela said, I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve, but if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die. Here's a poem for today by Philip Larkin entitled Coming. On longer evenings, light, chill, and yellow bathes the serene foreheads of houses. A thrush sings, laurel surrounded in the deep bare garden, its fresh peeled voice astonishing the brickwork. It will be spring soon. It will be spring soon, and I, whose childhood is a forgotten boredom, feel like a child who comes on a scene of adult reconciling and can understand nothing but the unusual laughter and starts to be happy. A poem by Philip Larkin, Coming, from his collected poems published by Ferris Strauss and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry, more at poetryfoundation.org. And by LegalZoom, resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Copper Wheel Inn, located in downtown Anchorage, near the city's restaurants, galleries, museums, and business district. The Copper Wheel Inn, with reservations online at copperwheel.com.
Hello, hello. It is Juno Afternoon. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and we have our regular guest at this time, Nancy DeCherney, the executive director from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, in the studio to tell us what is going on in the capital city.
Well, as much as I know.
You know a lot.
I
feel safe.
this evening, starting at 5 over at Cycle Alaska, Stephanie Hogan, John Staub are going to talk about their bicycling trips that they've been taking.
Oh, fun. Sure,
yeah, they do a lot. Let's see, there's Bluegrass Thursday over at the Red Dog Saloon. Tiny Post Office at Kindred Post is having a little concert with some Southeast folk musicians, two from Juno and one from Sitka. Seating's limited, so if you want to go, you best get there.
What time is that? Over at
it is at 6:30.
Yeah, that sounds great. A little Valentine's Day concert.
Yeah, a little tiny thing there. At 7 p.m., the Juno Audubon Society is presenting Killer and Humpback Whales Interactions at UAS Rec Center.
Mm.
And there's also tango dancing at Suite 907. There's a Backcountry Film Fest at 7 at Rockwell Winter Wildlands Alliance. Tomorrow, Friday the 12th, we're coming up on Valentine's Day, so
Valentine's Day weekend.
Everybody is just doing as much as they can to eat a lot of candy. So
it's been a while since Christmas.
I was starting to feel a little peaked. Downtown is sweet on you. A whole bunch of the stores are doing all sorts of little special things. I didn't make a list of all of them.
Oh,
but
really?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things.
So is it kind of like a first Friday? Like you just kind of walk around
And things are happening here and there.
So that sounds good.
I think they're going to have a guide someplace. But anyway, do that on Friday. And there are, for example, the Hangers having special dinners all weekend.
Oh, nice.
So that's
Is Valentine's Day. If you talk to the chefs at Salt, we just talked about the Hanger. If, you know, anyone who's listening who's thinking of taking their sweetie out to dinner, you should probably make a phone call.
Doug, are you listening?
Either that or get to the grocery store. Let's see. On Saturday, the 13th, the Tongass Turners, this is a bunch of woodworking guys or people. They meet out at Thunder Mountain Wood Shop, Thunder Mountain High School Wood Shop at 9 in the morning. There's an arts and crafts fair, Valentine's Arts and Crafts Fair at Mendenhall Mall at 10. The Nordic ski races are going on around town. Saturday morning at the movies, the Gold Town Nickelodeon does stuff at 11 a.m. for kids.
So it's a fundraiser for the
preschool co-op thing. So we can go do that. As I mentioned, there's a Valentine's dinner at the Hangar. There's a spaghetti dinner at St. Paul's Catholic Church in the Valley, which is a scholarship fundraising thing for the Filipino American Fund. But the real big news for me is it's Wearable Art Day. On Saturday night is the opening night for Wearable Art, and oh my goodness.
That's sold out, though.
But I will say that I know we always are able to put seats in. We just don't know exactly where they're going to be. So if you would like to come down and try, I don't think there's ever been a sold out show that I haven't gotten people into. So, you know.
And are both shows sold out?
Both shows are sold out, but
again, you should come.
You should come to it for sure. And then after that's all over, the Alaskan Bar has Susu and the Prophets. So take all your high energy and go darting over.
Is that Saturday night or Sunday
night? That's Saturday.
That's fun.
And I think also McGivney's is open. The downtown McGivney's will be open, and there'll be an after party over there. So Saturday is a really humdinger of a day.
So in other words, Friday night you should be roaming around downtown and checking out all the downtown suites. What's that called? Suite for your suites or something?
Downtown suite on you.
Suite on you. And then Saturday night you should also come down.
Yeah, it's just too many things to do. And then on Sunday, there's, again, Wearable Art. The doors open at 2, and the show begins at 3. There's a Valentine's dinners again. There's karaoke at Suite 907. Monday's a President's Day holiday for many people, so, you know, it's okay that we got a lot of things to do this weekend.
Exactly.
But the gospel workshops begin.
Yes. So what is the story with that? If one wanted to sing with the gospel workshop, how does one go about it and what's the commitment?
The commitment, you can buy a ticket at either online or coming by the Jack, or if you happen to be at Wearable Art, we'll have them there. Rehearsals are from 6:30 to 8 or 8:30 at the Jack Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. There will be a dress rehearsal probably Saturday afternoon. We haven't set the time exactly, but I'm guessing 2:30 at Thunder Mountain High School. And then the performances are on Sunday the 21st out at Thunder Mountain High School. One at performances at 2 and the other is at 5:30. And I just tell you, the people that I see singing in this are having more fun than really should be allowed. That's all I have to say about that.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so do sign up because
it was huge last year. How many people?
108 people. So it's really a wonderful community event. So let's remember that's coming up on Monday. On Tuesday, there's at noon the 1 billion rising in the Capitol steps, the actual Capitol steps of our Alaskan Capitol. There's an arts roundtable at 5 p.m. in the Juno Arts and Humanities Council Gallery. It's Elizabeth Paradovich Day, so I think there's things going on over at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall at 5 o'clock. There's a Lego League thing happening out at the Mendenhall Valley Library and a West Coast Swing Dancing at Suite 907. And Wednesday, it's basically all those same things. So pretty busy.
Sounds great. Yeah. So the big, 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 like, Juno foundational events are Wearable Arts and then the gospel weekends, gospel singing and the performances. And then isn't there, like, a king and queen of gospel?
Yes, this year. Oh, yeah, the Motown thing. I totally forgot about that. Okay. How did I do that? Bobby and Eustace, who come to do the gospel thing, actually also happen to be professional performers who do other things, and they do a Motown thing. This year, when they do it in Fairbanks, they have a special opportunity for people to showcase themselves and be elected or
voted on as the king or queen of Motown for Fairbanks. And so we're going to do it down here.
And where's that?
It's going to be on the 19th at the Jack. And again, you might be wanting to get your tickets to that Motown thing if you like, because it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, we all know the songs. And they were wonderful songs. They still are. So, of course, you vote by casting dollars at us. It's a fundraiser for the Willoughby Arts Complex that Bobby and Eustace offered to do for us every year. Yeah, it's really nice of them.
And since you are here and I can ask this question, I'm going to ask, what is the Willoughby Arts Complex and what is the status of it?
Well, it's proceeding, actually. The Willoughby Arts Complex is our hope and dream to actually get Juno to have a center for the arts. That's we've always needed this, and it's been on the works for, we found records going back into the 40s for this. But anyway, we had originally started to do a partnership with Perseverance. Perseverance has decided to focus their energy on their own programming type stuff. So it is the Juno Arts and Humanities Council that we're going forward. We just had the McDowell Group complete a feasibility study, which showed that the theater that we're planning to build is going to be a feasible structure. We're at the point where we're going to begin the capital campaign committee work, and we are starting to select architects. There were five architectural firms shortlisted who will be competing in a design competition. It's the three architectural firms from Juno, and then Bettesworth and Kuhman from up north.
And what does this what would this complex look like, and where would it be?
Well, it's going to attach itself to the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and extend towards Centennial Hall, which will make it easier. I don't know if you've ever tried to get across the parking lot during public market and various other things. It's kind of not very convenient. So this hopefully will make it so that things that are happening at Centennial Hall will be more, you can easily latch on to using the Juno Arts.
Would it connect it to buildings?
We haven't, these are things that the design people will decide.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the whole complex, now the SLAM building's coming online in May and June, and we are already talking with them about doing our Friday night concerts on their plaza. So I think that will be a little bit nicer than what we've been doing, I hope. But anyway, sort of making the whole area a big art center.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds fabulous. Well, keep us posted.
Yes, I will.
Keep us posted. Well, thank you for coming in, as you always do. And along with all those things that Nancy said, there's also the opera, Thunder Mountain. It's all right. We just talked about it. And the yacht rock party at the Alaskan on Friday night.
So many places.
So we are going to talk about the weather now. And it is mostly cloudy, patchy fog. That advisory of strong winds is gone. Tonight, it looks like 15 to 25 mile per hour gusts in the evening near downtown Juneau and Douglas. Tomorrow, rain in the morning, then rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 41. Friday night, numerous rain showers, becoming scattered snow showers late. Little or no snow accumulation. Saturday, a chance of rain, high around 41. Saturday night, 30 to 36 rain. Wind 10 miles to 20 miles per hour. And Sunday, Valentine's Day, rain, highs around 40. Thanks for listening to KTOO and Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. Right now, it is 38 degrees at the airport, 41 downtown, 34 at the Mendenhall Valley. Next thing, all things considered, and tune in tomorrow for Juno Afternoon. They'll be talking about the Fireside Lectures. The UPIC singer and drummer Byron Nikolai will be here with a preview of his UAS Sound and Motion presentation. Also, we'll get a little profile of Love, Inc. and listen to the audio postcard that Scott Burden, KTOO's very own Scott Burden, made for the Wearable Arts Extravaganza. All that and more. So, thanks for listening.